So my kids, they really, really love the game hide-and-seek. They're 2 years old and 4 years old, and they love the game of hide-and-seek, but they are completely terrible at it. You know what I mean? Like, Eli doesn't even get the concept. He just loves it when we say we're going to play hide-and-seek. And he tells me to play it, and then he just runs around the house. Ella will either take the exact same spot I just had, or she will be sticking out, like, most of her body behind, like, out from behind something and giggling the whole time. And so they're just terrible at playing hide-and-seek, but they love to play hide-and-seek. Growing up, I was just about as bad as them at playing hide-and-seek, of my memories that I have. I had a cousin, we were very close in age, so we were kind of best friends. I went over to his house a lot, he came over to my house a lot. And for some strange reason, every time I went over to his house, I had in my head, I should play hide-and-seek without telling him. And so when I got to his house, I would just run and find a hiding spot. He figured it out after a while that every time I went to his house, I would be hiding, but he got kind of annoyed by it. And also the first time, it wasn't that much fun. I remember getting bored, actually waiting for him to come find me. But he didn't know we were playing hide-and-seek, and it kind of, that's not how you play the game. Both parties have to know what's going on. Now, people don't seek you out unless you know you're playing that game. And last week, we talked about how all Christians have a mission. We've got a mission. We're to be God's witnesses on this earth. I hope you joined the life group and actually got to go through the same discussion again another time. One of the things should have been mentioned in that life group is this phrase: there are only two things you cannot do in heaven, sin and tell people about Jesus. Those are the only two things you can't do in heaven, sin and tell people about Jesus. If we're still on this earth and God hasn't zapped us into heaven yet, which of the two do you think we should be doing? Probably not sinning. Probably telling people about Jesus is why we are still on this earth. We've got a mission, and so let's do it. If you didn't join the group last week, I hope you do it this week, either tonight, tomorrow night, because we're moving now from the what I've got a mission to the how do I do this mission? How do we get going on this? We're going to take it step by step, so real slow, and make sure we cover all these things. Today we're just going to cover step one of how to do this mission. Here's the good news. Step one can be really, really, really easy. Really easy. In fact, here's one of its large components, eating. And here's one of its other components, just talking friendly, like having a friendly conversation. Those are the two big components of step one. We all eat and talk, so those two things aren't hard. Eating and talking is pretty simple. It sounds almost too easy. But this is how Jesus did a lot of his connections with people. Reading through the Gospels, it seems like half the time Jesus was either just hanging out with people or he was eating with people. Like, that's just what he did. When it describes what was going on, you can guess 50% of the time, he was probably eating with people. And so, either that or teaching. Those are the two examples pretty much we have of Jesus. And so here's one story about how Jesus connected with someone, partly by way of food. We'll be in Luke chapter 5 from where the story comes. And I'll go ahead and read it. Verse 27 through 32 is where I am. After this, he went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, "Follow me." And leaving everything, he rose and followed him. And Levi made him a great feast in his house, and there was a large company of tax collectors and others reclining at the table with them. And the Pharisees and their scribes grumbled at his disciples, saying, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answered them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." Now, Levi is the same guy named Matthew. This exact same story shared in the Gospel of Matthew, but with the name Matthew. It's the same guy, different names. Matthew is probably his preferred name because Matthew's the Gospel that Matthew wrote, and he calls himself Matthew. But I picked this one, even though there's the name confusion, because it explicitly says the party was at Matthew's house, and he was a tax collector. The other one just says there was a party after he gets called by Jesus and doesn't say his house. Maybe he was playing the humble card because he was the one writing the Gospel, like, not wanting to write, "Jesus came to my house to party," but maybe, I don't know. But here it explicitly says it was at Matthew's house, and he invited, and there's other tax collectors and sinners there. But let me slow down for a second, though, because at the beginning of this, we see that Jesus walks up to a tax collector. This is kind of not a big deal at this point, because instead of it just getting taken out of your paycheck back then, there were like toll booths set up all around the place, and so you'd walk up to the tax collector, pay him the money, and then you'd walk away. And so this isn't a big deal. And Jesus tells him, though, follow me. That was kind of a big deal, to walk up to a tax collector and actually, like, talk to him and not say, I want to punch you in the face when you walked up to a tax collector. We already know that Jesus has a decent crowd of followers following him. He's already called several of the disciples in the preceding chapters. And so they're walking around. They know he's this great teacher and this great miracle worker by now. They're walking up to this tax booth, and they're probably thinking, yeah, Jesus is going to give him what for. We're going to get to see Jesus chew out this evil Roman worker guy. And then he says, follow me. And the apostles would have probably been very confused, slightly annoyed, possibly. Let me explain this about tax collectors. To a Jew in the time of Jesus, the only people worse than Samaritans were pretty much tax collectors. And so, like, if you remember me talking about Samaritans before, you know anything about Samaritans. Samaritans were like the half-Jews who had a rival temple with the temple of the Israelites, and they fought over whose was better, and they liked to talk smack to each other all the time. And the people lower on the scale than them are tax collectors. And so, they're sellouts because they work for the Roman government. The Roman government is bad in their eyes. They were crooks. They did these horrible things. But not only that, just think about your paycheck. Like, our paycheck nowadays, it just comes automatically out. And so we don't have a face to the loss of that much money of our income. And so think about if you actually took that money home and then you walked up to someone and you had to give them that money back. You'd probably hate the person's guts, most likely. And so I don't blame some of the reaction they had to tax collectors. To make it worse, they got paid whatever they felt like, too, back then. The way their pay scale worked is they taxed more heavily than the government said they should, and they kept the extra that was beyond what was taxed. And so whenever you saw anything that a tax collector was wearing, eating, or are living in, you knew that your income went to pay directly for that. That it happens without our knowing, without our thinking about it. and so the disciples knew that everything in Matthew's house is paid for by their wages, and Jesus goes and has a party there. Like, that, I can understand people getting annoyed about tax collectors back then. And Jesus walks up to this tax collector and says, follow me, and now they're thinking we're stuck in this group with a tax collector, and he's, like, lower on the scale than sinners in their mind. And so... And then Jesus has a party there. And guess who shows up at the party? Who does it say comes to the party? Well, the Pharisees see the party and they talk to Jesus' disciples, but who's there before the Pharisees show up? More tax collectors. It makes sense. Those are Matthew's friends, since tax collectors didn't typically have friends that weren't tax collectors. But the people who show up at the party are more of these horribly evil people that the disciples probably just want to punch in the face. These are the people that Jesus goes and has a party with, the kind of people that you shelter your children from, who probably came up with things like Common Core. These are the evil ones that they're having this party with. And you want to know one really cool thing this passage teaches us, though? One thing, it's not the whole main point of the sermon, but one cool thing this passage teaches us is that sometimes the person you least expect to start following Christ is the person who's most ready. That's one thing we see here, because Matthew just drops everything and starts following him. That's one cool thing about this passage. Jesus didn't mind spending time with those who needed him. He did not mind people who needed him around. The ones that religious people ran from, sheltered their children from, maybe. He did it so much that this was actually a regular accusation against Jesus. This is a different passage, but Luke 7:34, Jesus is talking and says, the Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, look at him, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. That was like an accusation. The way this is written, it seems like that happened. They said that a lot about Jesus. Is that Jesus is a friend of sinners and tax collectors. Why is he anyone special if he's a friend of tax collectors and sinners? But Jesus didn't mind connecting with them. He didn't. Because he didn't come for the healthy, he says in that passage about the party at Matthew's house. He came for the sick. He says, the healthy don't need doctors, the sick need doctors, and I'm a doctor. He's the doctor, actually. And many of us who go to this, many people here work in hospitals, or at least you've been in a hospital, or maybe you don't work there, but we know that unless you work there, or you're sick yourself, or you love someone there, like, those are the reasons why you go. Hospitals are filled with sick people. That's why hospitals exist. And so the church doesn't do the world any good if it's not filled with sick people, because Jesus said, I'm here for the sick people, and that's why he's here. So how do we reach the sick people? How do we do what Jesus said? Hey, I'm here for the sick people, the ones that people don't necessarily like, the ones that need my help. And step one, it's we connect with them. Like Jesus was connected with people who needed a doctor, we connect with them. That is step one of this. When I say that the first step of our mission, though, is to connect, as you probably are aware, the best way to connect with people is to eat with them. You know, that's true, connect, but it's not just to connect with just anyone. When we say the step one of our mission on this earth is to connect with people, it's not just anyone we're supposed to connect with. Our mission is to connect with those who are in need of a doctor, those who are sick. It's not just to connect with the groups that we're used to, our church groups, our similarly minded families, our co-ops, our life groups, even our Bible studies. It's not to connect with those people. That's actually a needed thing. If you connect with those who need a doctor, it's important to connect with people who are similar to you so you have an anchor in your life. But that's not the mission, though. The mission is go out and connect with other people who need the doctor of Christ in their lives, to connect with sinners. I mean, we're all sinners, but it's to connect with the sinners that are in the obvious need of that, even. If those are the only people with whom you connect is the ones that are similar to you, who don't seem like they need a doctor so much, who actually already are saved, if those are the only ones you connect with, then you're not following Jesus' mission. You're not acting like Jesus on this earth, actually, because he connected with those people all the time. And those are the people that he hung out with. Again, it was an accusation against him. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, look at him, a glutton and a drunkard and a friend of tax collectors and sinners. He was accused of being too friendly with drunkards and with sinners and with tax collectors. I find it interesting that there are sinners and then there are tax collectors. Has that ever stuck out to you? Like, it's kind of funny. I mean, that shows how much low they had, but to contemporize that, we could think of, okay, what, there are sinners and then there are these people that we don't want to be around. That's how we could connect it today. Which category do we find more repulsive than regular sinners? Is kind of what was going on then. It's how we can think of, because those are the people that Jesus connected with so often, it was part of his regular accusations. It was almost part of his title. It actually was one of his titles, friend of sinners. But it's probably not tax collectors to us. Maybe it is to you. but maybe it's Democrats. There's sinners and there's Democrats. Maybe there's sinners and there's Republicans. Maybe it's those who are gluttonous or those who are lazy. Maybe you're okay connecting with sinners, but not those who practice homosexuality. Those ones are just, those are a different level of sinner. Or maybe it's illegal aliens. Or maybe you don't know their sin, but they are from a different culture, so they're probably worse off sinners than I am. Maybe that's some of the thoughts we have. All those people are the kind of people that Jesus connected with. Jesus loved hanging out with them. He had parties at their houses, which is, Jesus had a lot of parties, actually. His first miracle was making a party even better. Jesus partied with people who needed a doctor. And if we want to follow Jesus on this mission, we should stop judging people based off their specific sins and instead want to connect with them because they're sick and Jesus is a doctor. We're called to be witnesses. We're not called to be the prosecuting attorney. We're not called to be the defending attorney either. And there are some Christians who've gone too far in the other direction and decided to become the defending attorney. But we're not attorneys. We are witnesses. That's what we are. We're just witnesses. So step one is to connect, eat with people, get to know them, realize they're humans with a story, not some person that you occasionally see. Don't just eat with your family. Don't just eat with your friends. Don't just eat with your clean people who are non-sinning and the ones who fit in with you. Eat with the people that Jesus would have eaten with. That's sort of the step one. If you're his representative and you are, then eat in the place of where Jesus needs to be heard from. We connect with people who need to be connected with Christ. And the problem is many of us don't know the sick person who needs a doctor. Many of us don't. Many of us only have our Christian cliques. The Christian number crunchers tell us that the average Christian, after they've been a Christian for 7 years, no longer has non-Christian friends. That's what statistics tell us, is that the average Christian, once they've been in the circle for 7 years, they no longer have Christian friends. Isn't that like no longer have non-Christian friends? Isn't that like a blatant disregard of the Great Commission? Like, that's doing the opposite of what Jesus' final words were in the Gospels and his final word in the book of Acts 2. We're called to go, and if you don't believe me, look around the room. We've got these banners that tell us to do things like that are all Jesus' words here. The words telling us to go and bring Christ to a sick world. And seriously, how many non-Christian friends do each of us have? And I don't mean like Facebook friends or just acquaintances, but I mean like friends who How many of them have your cell phone number and you wouldn't be upset if they called you at a weird time at night? Or how many are you actually connected with? How many do you share meals with? Maybe it's time to go out and find and connect with people that Jesus would have been connected with. Because that's what Jesus did on this earth, so we want to follow him. Do something like Jesus. I'll admit it's very hard for me to do. I play an extrovert on Sunday mornings, but in reality I'm an introvert, and it's hard. It is. I just like people who are like me. That's the natural human tendency, is to not branch out and do that. But regardless of however we're wired, though, it's still our mission. Just like if you're wired with a predisposition to a sin of commission, maybe we're wired to do a sin of omission too. We still need to go around our wiring and still work on these things. It's still on my shoulders, but honestly, actually, here's a moment where I need like all of you guys to step up, because step one is a lot easier for you than it is for me. Just have you ever like noticed what happens when someone says, "I'm a preacher" in a conversation? Like, I can see in their eyes suddenly a different look, and a wall goes up to make it harder. They're either already a Christian, or it's suddenly become harder for me to be their friend. Like, that happens. I can see it happen. You guys don't have that. You don't say, "Hey, my career is being a professional Christian." like, you don't say, "I'm a preacher," and then that happens. So it's actually, this job is easier for you than it is for me. So this step one, you guys need to step up and do this part. Now, I personally still have that mission to connect. I'm not you saying it's an excuse for me not to do it. I still have that. It's just there's barriers between that I've got to figure out ways to work around and still work on connecting with people, but you don't have some of those barriers. We all have other barriers, but you don't have that one that I've got, so we should do it. Become friends with those who need a doctor. All right, so we've done the case study in Matthew. We've discussed connecting in general, but here's the last point, or movement, or argument for the sermon, whatever you want to call it. Why is this a big deal? Why connect? Number one, because Jesus did it. I mean, obviously, we're following in Jesus' footsteps when we connect with sinners and things such as that. But further, why did Jesus do it? Was it just like this is a divine decree that Jesus is supposed to connect, or does it actually make sense, like for his mission on earth? This is the best way to do it. I think it makes sense. It's the best way to spread the gospel. Jesus did it because it's the best way for his mission to work. Here's why, with an analogy. When you go on a blind date, I've never gone on a blind date. If you're doing internet dating, something like that, and I know some people in this church have done blind dates or internet dating, but just if you haven't, think about the idea behind it. When you go on a first date with someone who you've never met before, do you instantly tell them your whole life story? Or like give them your address? Or send them over to your parents' house to meet your parents right away? Like, that doesn't happen, right? That's kind of weird. You probably don't want to have a second date with a person who does that. do you think dating relationships are maybe easier if you've invested in each other first? And they make more sense to do things like that. Yes, the same is true for our lives being witnesses for Christ, our life on mission. If you're not connected, it's way harder to reach people. Because this is the world we live in. Here's a picture of a typical no soliciting sign. No soliciting, this means if you didn't call, aren't a friend, you're not carrying my mail, don't have an appointment, aren't family, are pushing your own religion, and you're not handing out million-dollar checks, don't even knock, my dog is hungry. Like, that's not a far-fetched thought behind what goes through our heads when someone knocks on the door, right? Here's another slide. This one, they beat the system here in this next picture. See, she's got Girl Scout cookies. It says, no soliciting. We are too broke to buy anything. We already know who we're voting for. We found Jesus. Seriously, unless you're selling Thin Mints, please go away. And she's got a box of Thin Mints there. So she beat the system. But unless you're delivering pizza or delivering cookies, you don't knock, right? Like, that's sort of the mentality our culture has today, right? I mean, not everybody. Some people aren't like that. But the average person, and I kind of, when someone knocks on the door, I instantly think, what's going on? Why are they here? Like, if I'm not expecting someone. And so we need to think about that. One preacher and author said, "Is we never win our enemies to Christ, only our friends." Now, is it possible to win an enemy to Christ? Possibly. Is it a whole lot easier to win a friend to Christ? Hopefully, or else you've got a really weird friendship, and it's not as deep of a friendship as maybe you thought, if they're not at least willing to listen on issues like that. But we live in a culture where unless someone's delivering some food to our house, we don't tend to want to interact with them. But if it's your friend, What if it's your friend? Like one of your close friends, a friend that you love talking to, and they show up at your door? You're going to be a lot more excited than if it's, you know, like a Mormon who shows up at your door, right? Yeah, and so it's friends is an important part of this mission. You don't have to be friends with everyone to reach them to Christ, but you should be developing connections for that purpose and to reach the people that Jesus would have tried to reach. And so our mission is to eat with someone, sort of. It's not necessarily to eat. Really, it's to make friends, to connect with people. If you read the book, the Life on Mission book that's going through, the one written by Tim Harlow, again, there's lots of Life on Mission books that are titled the same title, so find the one by Tim Harlow. It's the one we're following along in these series. If you read that book, he actually recommends in step one, you don't invite them into your house. You just do, make sure it's outside. So it's a very even, like, initial level of connection. Like, invite them to a barbecue in your backyard, maybe. So he's not saying, like, make them your best buds yet, but work on developing connections. So how do we do that? Maybe it's we be connected with people more than principles. I won't cover the whole story now, but if you think about it, the woman caught in adultery, most of us know that story. When Jesus was faced with the choice of do you choose people or do you choose principles, which one did he choose? He chose the person. He wanted to help her instead of the principle of, oh, she's a horrible person, she was caught in adultery, how bad is this? He chose, I'm going to help the person more. Not that he violated like morals, but the cultural principle that was there. The people, unlike your Christian circles, those who are the sick, who need a friend to bring them a doctor, Jesus cared for those people a whole lot. Maybe we need to be concerned enough about people to get to know them, connect with them, share meals with them, learn their names. Learning names is a huge one. Find a place to be consistently, maybe, like a restaurant or something where you're consistently interacting with the same group of workers. If you work with people, maybe treat them like people instead of props in the movie starring you. And that's an important part that a lot of us, it's hard to think of other people as humans with just as deep of emotions as what's going on through our own heads. If you don't know anyone who's a Christian, perhaps you just need to repent of that blatant sin of omission, of disregarding the Great Commission. If we don't know any non-Christians, then we're violating Christ's command to go. So share meals in your homes or restaurants or grill and invite the whole neighborhood over, something such as that. There's a really simple way to start in your bulletins. I know some of the bulletins didn't have it, so hopefully in your bulletins there's a handout. It's got a shape of some houses drawn on it. It's got like the church logo and surrounded by houses there. It's both a test and a tool. The test is, do you know enough names to fill in the boxes around you is one thing. You can pretend like that's your house is the logo and the houses around you are your neighborhood. Can you write in the names of all your neighbors? Some people can. I know a whole lot of people, especially in like my generation, who can't. Two of the things that have done that is HVAC systems and garage doors has kept us from getting to know our neighbors. So we just open the garage door, drive in, close the garage door, and never interact. And HVAC systems, we don't have to go outside. But so those, which are great tools, I love garage doors and HVAC systems, don't get me wrong. But that just means we've got to think about how to connect with people too. So learn people's names. I had to ask my neighbors next door to me what their names were this week. I'll admit it. But the thing is, if you don't know their names, they probably don't know yours most of the time. And so just feel free to ask, write their names on it. You can even write like what you know about them in those little boxes. Pray for them when you see this. Leave it in like your fridge or your mirror, and so that you'll be seeing their name constantly. You'll be thinking about them constantly. Pray for that doors will be open, and you've got ways to connect with them. And then God usually answers prayers like that when you're praying for a way to be a witness in the world. Here's the neat thing. They're houses, but you don't have to pretend it's your house and in your neighborhood. You can pretend it's like the apartments near you, or you can pretend it's offices or cubicles around you, or registers at the front of McDonald's or Walmart. You can pretend it's anything you want, but anything that works for you, connect with people and write their names in, and so you'll be thinking about how to connect with them more often and see their names. If you don't know their names, just write in what you know, like strange person next door or with the dogs that are really annoying. You can do that, but don't show them the card. They actually, in some of the material for the stuff, they say, put the card away if it's on your fridge. If they come over to your house, don't let them see it. But some people get weirded out by that. I don't know. But maybe, but just use this. This is a good way to say, hey, these are some people in my circle. This is my Jerusalem. Jesus said, first go to Jerusalem, the area that you're standing in. This is where I am. These are the people surrounding me. Let's see if I connect. can connect with them, and then we'll talk about more steps later as we go on. But first, connect. My card is interesting. I can't do like just the perfect thing. People across the street from me just so recently I got baptized in another church. One person diagonally to me is a pastor at another church. So I'm going to like shift over a couple houses on my card. And so you can get creative with it. It's not like a hard and fast rule. But does that make sense? It's an easy way to start, easy way to start connecting with people. Life on mission, step one is to connect. Make sure you're connected with some non-Christians because Jesus was connected with lots of people who needed him. I'm just about done, but I want to ask one more question before I wrap up, and that's the question of, did Jesus ever say, invite your friends to church? Bill already knows. He's shaking his head no. No, he'd never said, invite your friends to church. Again, look at Jesus' words in these banners. Send people, go, witnesses, fish for people. They're like active, go and do something things, right? Not just like sit and wait for them. Do they sound more like wait until they walk into the church doors, or do they sound more like go get them? Go get them is what Jesus was commanding us to do. Because a lot of us are like kids playing hide and seek. They're like me when I was playing hide and seek with my cousin. I go and hide somewhere and go, hee hee hee, they'll never find me, as we like hide out behind church doors or behind our houses or something, our Bible studies, things like that, going, if they find me, we'll play, but they don't even know we're playing hide and seek. How can we be witnesses when we're playing hide and seek with people who don't even know that we're playing? It doesn't work that way, does it? Unless you just get really lucky, and we get lucky sometimes. But the much more efficient way is go get them, right? And so find a different game to play besides hide and seek because we're supposed to connect with people. So let's start connecting with some and maybe get the accusation Jesus got. Be a friend of sinners.